Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today. Ooh,
like a couple of bocce balls.
That did sound like a couple of bocce balls. We're having an old-fashioned.
Mm-hmm.
With maple syrup in it. Weird.
Yeah, it's the real shit. And it's from Costco.
You will bring up Costco any chance you get.
God, could they sponsor us?
Yeah, I was just going to say, we can't be bringing up Costco left and right unless we get a sponsorship.
I mean, that would be the peak of my career.
Yeah, I think that's true.
End of story.
Yeah.
Anything I do from that moment on, peanuts.
Sure.
Right?
Peanuts.
Peanuts.
I like the
But also, if you wanted a bag of peanuts...
You know where they got that?
You know the cheapest place for that?
For so many peanuts.
So many peanuts.
Yeah, true. Well, hey, here we are. We're live or something. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, you guys know what the deal is.
We started a little bit different today, and that's cool. We like that.
We're really putting ourselves out there.
No, honestly, it's pretty late. And both of us are punchy. It's been a long week. It's been a long day.
Yeah.
And here we are. But it's good. We've got an interesting story.
And I get to say crevasse.
Crevasse. We do get to say crevasse again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is about someone having an unfortunate encounter with a crevasse.
But it sounds so beautiful, kind of.
Crevasse to me, I know it's very much just the word for a big crack in the earth or like in a glacier, but I feel similarly about crevasse as I do to turmeric, if that makes sense.
Wait, why?
Because I don't want to say crevasse. I want to say crevice, just like I want to say turmeric and not turmeric. Anyway, nobody cares. It's fine. It's fine. I'm alone in this,
so,
and it's fine.
It's the same in that it's not pronounced how you want it
Correct.
To be.
Okay. Yeah. But I do know that crevasse is like very much what it's called. So I will
shut my
mouth.
I feel like I got whiplash. I'm in, you know, a glacier and then I'm making ramen with turmeric, you know.
It's just the words.
A random spice.
Yeah. It's the word association. I just feel similarly. Anyway, this is stupid. Why don't we just jump right in?
Moving on.
So our story is going to take place in 2013 in Glacier National Park. Glacier National Park is an American national park located in northwestern Montana on the Canada-United States border. The park encompasses more than 1 million acres and includes parts of two mountain ranges, which are subranges of the Rocky Mountains. And it has more than 130 named lakes, more than 1,000 different species of plants, and hundreds of species of animals.
Sick.
Yeah, it's
loaded.
I love
numbers. It's loaded up.
It is loaded up with things
with like
living
life.
Things. Yeah. It is one of the jewels of the U.S. park system and has over 700 miles of trails. 36-year-old Ted Porter was living in Los Angeles but had been coming to Glacier National Park his whole life. His father had worked at Many Glacier Hotel when he was a young man, and Ted had also worked there for some time, and he had attended the University of Montana and had considerable mountaineering and backcountry experience. Glacier National Park was also a place that his family visited frequently. They loved the scenery and just had a good time there together.
Hanging out.
A good, crunchy family.
Mm-hmm.
Continuing the family tradition, the Porters agreed to meet up for Labor Day weekend in 2013 to hike for a few days. And usually after his parents would leave, Ted would spend 2 to 3 days there by himself. He especially loved spending time in the backcountry alone. And like I said, he had plenty of backcountry experience, so he felt like he knew what was going on. You can go at your own pace, do what you want to do, you don't have to answer to anybody, and you don't have any curfew. So, completely untethered Ted, if you will.
How old is he?
36.
Yeah, no curfew at 36. Yeah. Like,
you can't tell me what time I have to be back at the tent, Mom.
Yeah, no, I'm like, this is feeling like a younger person's story, you know?
Yeah, well, he just said, you know, he's out there by himself. He gets to do whatever the hell he wants because he's alone in the country, in the back country.
He's a grown man.
Yeah.
He's his own man.
Yeah. He also liked how dangerous it was. It was kind of exciting to him to be out there by himself, so...
That's what he likes to do. He's an adrenaline junkie, it sounds like.
Sounds like it. At the time, there were 25 glaciers at the park, but on September 3rd of 2013, Ted's goal was to climb Mount Jackson, which is one of the six peaks over 10,000 feet in Glacier Park, and he wanted to see the Jackson Glacier since there aren't too many glaciers left in the park, thanks to global warming.
Love that.
Yeah, hate that, really. Jackson Glacier is one of the bigger glaciers, so he wanted to see that one before it disappears. Also, the Jackson Glacier overlook is one of the most beautiful parts of the whole park. He knew that if he climbed fast, he could do the whole climb in one day. He did get a late start that morning, but he set a brisk pace on the 6.2-mile hike to Gunsight Lake. That 6 miles was just the first part of his hike, and thankfully it was flat, so he made pretty good time. But the next phase of the hike was an extremely steep trail up through trees to the glacier. It was wet and very muddy, which is not the most forgiving terrain. Along the way, he passed a group of hikers with full backpacks who appeared to be on an overnight trip, probably to the campground at the lake. After hiking another 1.8 miles, he made it to the backcountry Jackson Glacier Overlook, and from there he set out on a route to Mount Jackson that would take him across the glacier with the hopes that he would get a good view of the Harrison Glacier. And once he made it to the base of the glacier, he was very pleased. The view was stunning, and he was the only one up there, so he had the whole thing to himself. It had rained recently, which made the glacier more slick than it usually was, so Ted put on his crampons before continuing along the ice. Crampons are basically spikes that attach to the bottom of your hiking boots to help you walk across the ice.
The idea of climbing a glacier to look at another glacier is kind of funny to me.
It is funny. He's also out there completely by himself. It's like he saw backpackers or whatever, but like that was multiple miles ago, and now he's just like on a glacier by himself.
It's got to be one of the most peaceful things ever.
Yeah, sounds, you know, like it, but also a little spooky.
I don't know, maybe for us, but he's probably lapping it up.
Yeah, lapping it up.
That I don't know. He likes it.
I understood.
You know, he enjoys it.
He likes it. He's lapping it up.
It's his thing.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
But climbing a glacier is really dangerous. Like, it's not something that is necessarily advised to do by yourself, but I don't know. He was doing it.
Bah.
And we love that for him. Until we don't. So he had his crampons with him, which was really good, but he also had his ice axe, and like the crampons, it is one of the most important pieces of equipment you can have with you while climbing a glacier. He also had trekking poles, which are basically like ski poles that he was using to hold himself steady, like a walking stick, but for a glacier.
And there's two.
Yes, thank you. Your gear is extremely important when you're making a journey like Ted's. Although Ted had been to Glacier National Park many times, hiking a glacier can be a very dangerous thing, like I said. Some of the biggest dangers are falling ice, crevasses, ice avalanches, or sudden glacier floods. The glacier front and sides can be very unstable, and large ice blocks can fall at any time. Glaciers are constantly moving very slowly, which puts stress on the glacier and can cause sudden ice breakage. And since a glacier is basically a gigantic piece of ice, slipping is also a big concern. People often lose control and slide into rocks and trees. And the presence of wildlife is also a threat. Glacier National Park is home to both black and grizzly bears, as well as mountain lions. But one of the most dangerous things are the crevasses. We've definitely talked about this in past episodes, but for anyone who doesn't know, a crevasse is a very big, deep crack in a glacier or the Earth's surface. And when I first learned about them, I thought it was pronounced crevice, because crevasse, like we said in the beginning, sounds quite silly, but they are different things. Crevice is basically defined as a small crack in something, and then a crevasse is like a big crack in the Earth.
Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah.
It's small and big.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes crevasses are not visible because they are covered by surface snow, and this can happen during winter snowstorms when wind causes the drifting snow to build out from the upwind side of the crevasse. Basically, the snow blows over the crevasse and it hardens in place, and it kind of hides it.
Like a booby trap.
Just like a booby trap. The glacier's out here booby trapping everyone.
Not cool.
Yeah, it's not great. So in this way, large crevasses can be entirely hidden beneath a thin layer of snow. Snow bridges can be strong enough to support the weight of a person, but crossing them is extremely risky. And most times, unless you have the poles that he was carrying with him, you don't even know that you're on top of one of these snow bridges. Because mountaineers or hikers or whatever will poke their poles down into the snow. And if it goes all the way through, then they know they're over like a gigantic opening. So they're basically constantly poking at the ground to make sure it's solid.
I mean, this is so scary to me because I feel that I would be doing this and then my attention span would be used up.
Yeah, your ADHD.
I would just be like, why the fuck do I just keep doing this? You know, like this is so boring. It's like, okay, ground, 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 ground for like a whole mile.
Yeah.
And then the one time that it's not, I would miss it.
Yeah, you wouldn't even be paying attention.
No, I'd be looking at the other glacier.
Right.
You know?
Well, then maybe mountaineering isn't for you.
No, it's not. Like, that's my fear.
Yeah. But if people don't do that, they can basically take one wrong step and fall over 100 feet into the earth, like into a crack.
Yes.
So,
my fear.
Right, exactly. Some crevasses have measured as large as 20 meters or 66 feet wide and 45 meters or 148 feet deep.
That's deep.
That's pretty big. Falling into something that deep can cause death from injury after the fall, but oftentimes hypothermia is the cause of death for hikers who fall in because they can't get out. So you're just kind of suffering down there.
That's the worst.
Yeah, and also, a fall that far, you're gonna, at the very least, get pretty majorly injured. So, yeah, it's like you can die from the fall and just, like, hit your head or break your neck, but for the most part, it's like you're gonna break your leg and then freeze, which is pretty bleak.
Ugh.
Yeah. And Ted knew all this stuff, but he wasn't very concerned. He was so unconcerned that he had dressed pretty lightly, wearing only a shirt and pants, and to his surprise, it was colder than he anticipated it would be on the glacier. He assessed which would be the easiest way to climb the mountain, and he saw that there were crevasses to his immediate right, which cut off the route that he was going to take, and to his left, he saw a rock rib on the far side of the glacier that looked like it went all the way up to the top of Mount Jackson. So he was like, all right, I'll just go up the rocks and climb all the way up to the top of the mountain. And throughout his hike, Ted took a video journal on his phone to document his process. He pointed out things he saw and how he was feeling throughout the journey, and at that point, he was having a really good time. He felt like climbing up until this point had been pretty easy for him, and he would have no trouble getting to the top. But once he made it to the rocks and off the glacier, his journey definitely started to slow down. As he made it to the rock rib and stepped off the glacier, Ted took off his crampons since he'd no longer be walking on ice. But what he discovered when he started climbing this new area, the rock was very slippery and covered in mud, and he kept finding himself on a series of ledges. He was hoping that he could climb those ledges, kind of like a series of stairs all the way to the top of the mountain, but as he went on, he continued slipping, and he realized that he wasn't going to be able to find a safe enough route to the top, which was when he decided to turn around, because it was already starting to become later in the day. So he's like, all right, I'm slipping, I'm not going to make it there before dark, so I'm just going to turn around. So he was taking the safer option. You know, he could have just kept pushing forward, but he was like, nope, this is too dangerous, I'm going to turn around.
Yeah, I mean, seems pretty responsible to me.
Very reasonable. It just wasn't the right day for the climb he wanted to do. It was dangerous conditions and the weather wasn't great, and it was too late in the day for him to be by himself. He used good judgment and he turned back. Thinking he would shave off some time in his trip back, he decided instead of going back down the slick, muddy path he had climbed up, he would just get off the rock rib and head back onto the glacier, which happened to be right next to the rocks. But when he got onto the glacier, he decided not to put back on his crampons or take out his ice axe so that he could slide down if he had to. So he basically was like, I'm going to try to shoe ski down this glacier and get down quicker.
How wide is the widest crevasse again? I think you said 66 feet.
Yeah, 66 feet wide.
My guy, maybe not. So he doesn't even have the poles?
He has his poles, but he doesn't have his ice axe out.
Oh, okay.
So the ice axe and the crampons are what could save you if you started like falling into a crevasse. The poles are just like helping you poke the ground along the way.
Oh, okay.
But like the crampons help you dig your feet into the ice so that you're not like slipping. And the ice axe, you can like dig it into the side if you're falling and hopefully stop yourself. But he didn't have either of those out, which was a rookie mistake. And by rookie, I mean, it was just a veteran mistake he made. Yeah, a veteran mistake. He probably just got a little too cocky. He's like, it's fine. I know what I'm doing. So we're at the point where he steps off the rocks. He's back on the glacier and he's just in his shoes. And he figured he could just slide down from where he was to make it faster. And at that point, he was at the very top of the glacier looking out to make sure there was no crevasses in front of him. And from where he was at the angle he was at, he couldn't see any in front of him. He did remember seeing the two or three big crevasses that he had passed earlier, but he couldn't quite remember where they were. But he figured it would be okay since he didn't see anything ahead of him. What he didn't know was that the angle he was looking down at was concealing these major crevasses. And that was a big mistake on his part. As he took one more step forward, he thought to himself, well, if you fall, but before he could even finish his thought, he fell.
No way.
Yeah. So not only did he fall, but he began sliding down the glacier feet first and completely out of control. He couldn't stop himself, no matter how hard he tried. He tried digging his heels of his boots into the ice. He tried using his ski poles he had been walking with to stop himself. But no matter what he did, he was barreling down this glacier. He thought everything would be okay and he'd come to a halt at some point. But out of nowhere, a huge crevasse appeared in front of him. And as he slid very quickly toward it, his stomach dropped because he knew what was coming. He smashed directly into the front wall of the crevasse and then fell 40 feet down.
Ugh.
When he hit the bottom, he said it didn't even feel real. It just felt like he was in some kind of terrible nightmare and he couldn't wake up. He said, quote, from what I remember, it was violent and fast. I hit the front side, the far wall, and then bounced back, and I must have just dropped straight down, and I ended up on my butt and my legs with a broken back. I just knew something was severely wrong. The pain was unbelievable. Ted had landed on his back, and the pain from that fall was excruciating. He knew he was in really bad shape because the pain was paralyzing. Before now, Ted had always wondered if he were in a life or death situation, who would he want to say goodbye to? And he realized now that he would be learning what his answer would be the hard way. He whipped out his phone and he started recording another one of his video journals that he had been taking along the way, but this time it was kind of like a goodbye video. He said through his pained groans, Mom and Dad, I fell into a crevasse. My back is effing killing me. I'm still alive. You guys, if I don't make it out, I love you. I'm not kidding. This is no joke.
Oof.
Yeah. Ted knew he had a very serious injury and he couldn't really see a way out of this. He didn't know what was wrong, but he knew how much pain he was in, and it seemed impossible for him to move at that point. He took that video for his parents as a goodbye to them, because he assumed he would be found at some point, and if he wasn't alive when that happened, they would hopefully find his phone and be able to recharge it. He wanted his family to know what had happened to him. Ted said the moments after making that video were the most lonely feelings he has ever had in his entire life, because he was alone on his back 40 feet below the surface and nobody was around. If he was going to survive, it would be up to him to get himself out of there. So Ted looked around to see if there was a clear path for him to climb out. He had no real technical ice climbing experience, but at the same time, he saw one portion of the front of the crevasse wall that wasn't completely vertical. He saw that as he lay there, and he felt like that may be his only chance to get out. Ted didn't know, but he had broken multiple vertebrae in his back in the fall. I also believe he broke a rib and had like internal bleeding, so he was just not doing well.
Yeah, although I feel like the broken back is worse.
It's bad.
Than the rib.
Yeah, probably.
Like, I'm sure the rib hurts, but it doesn't sound as life-threatening.
No, multiple broken vertebrae sound terrible.
Yeah. Can he even walk?
Yes, he could still move his legs, but he was just crazy. In excruciating pain. Yeah, he wasn't paralyzed at that point.
Got lucky.
He got extremely lucky, and I'll tell you exactly how lucky he got later, but yeah, he for sure got lucky. And speaking as someone who has a really messed up back, back pain is no joke.
No, it's not.
No joke.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
So he had to get his backpack off of his back, which was under him, and then sit up to take out his ice axe, his crampons, and put them on. And just imagining having to like get the backpack out from under you and like just those tiny movements with that kind of injury. Ooh, it sends shivers down my spine. I had a terrible back situation this week, and I mean, it was nothing compared to this, but I could barely move for like a whole day. It was terrible.
Yeah.
So anyway, point being, I empathize with Ted. The process was extremely slow because of how little movement he could make without being in excruciating pain, but very slowly he got them on and he stood up. He only had one ice axe, so as he dug his shoe spikes into the wall of the ice, he had his ice axe in his right hand, and he had to just claw at the ice with his left to try to get any kind of grip as he climbed. Because think about it, if you're climbing vertically up a wall and you only have one axe, it's like you only can pull yourself up with that axe.
Is it completely vertical or is it like tilted forward a little bit?
Well, he said that the part that he was climbing, not all of it, was completely vertical. But at some point, he is climbing vertically.
That's crazy. But I mean, he has to get the axe out at some point.
Yes.
And then it's just his shoes.
Every time he moves, like upward, he has to take the ice axe out and readjust it.
I mean, you better be leaning on that wall.
Right. That's the point, is like he had to literally claw into it with his left hand and, you know, hope that his shoes held on. Like,
right.
It's spooky. Only having one ice axe was a huge concern because he was terrified that if he pulled it out of the ice wall to go higher, he would just fall backwards.
Right.
Right. So because that was a very real danger for Ted, he made extremely slow progress, going only inches at a time. As he removed the ice axe to get it higher, he would have to press his whole face into the ice to stay as close to the wall as possible. And as if that wasn't hard enough, he was also battling the blinding pain of the broken vertebrae in his back. The climb was extremely difficult and terrifying, but he managed to pull himself to the top of the crevasse and over the ledge to lay on the ice in front of the hole. So he made it out.
He climbed out. 40
feet.
With a broken back.
And one ice axe.
Vertical.
40 feet.
That's really amazing.
I know. He was in the fetal position with his ice axe in the snow to hold him there because he needed a breather, one, and two, he was in such terrible pain. While on the ground, he looked around to see where he could get up and walk across the glacier, which was when he saw that he was laying on a small ledge between the crevasse he was just in and another massive opening in the ice. So he's laying between two crevasses right now. And the second one was even deeper and bigger than the one he was just in.
So he got lucky it was that one?
He got lucky it was that one, but also womp womp, you know?
Wow, what a horrible day.
Yeah.
You know?
So he thought to himself that if he fell again, he would be right back to where he started, and he could not do that again. To get out of that area, he stayed laying down on his side and just shimmied himself forward with the ice axe. He needed to get himself past the crevasses he was between before he stood up. That way, if he fell again, he would slide past it and not right into it. So he inched himself forward enough that he made it past the two crevasses and decided that it was safe enough for him to stand up. He was in really bad shape, and as he looked around, he hoped he would see someone up there with him, but there was no one. And as he walked, he fell several times and was moving so slowly, but he knew he had to make it down to Gunsight Lake, which was the last place that he had seen people who he thought were hopefully camping. He was hoping he'd be able to get down there because once he made it off the glacier, he still had miles of hiking ahead of him through unforgiving terrain in bad weather, and he was in bear country during hunting and feeding season.
Yeah, I forgot about that part.
Right?
But when you were reading all the dangers, I was just thinking, yep, okay. Bears?
Mm-hmm.
Two?
Black bears, grizzly bears, and mountain lions.
On top of everything.
Yeah, and it's bad weather, and it's, like, super muddy and, like, not super easy to walk in.
Can we find a... Give me a positive.
Yeah, give me a break.
Give me an easy part about this.
No, there's none. And also, just the front part of his hike, before he even made it to where the glacier area was 6 miles. So he's very far away from anyone. And he knew that there was always the danger of running into a bear while he was in Glacier National Park. On the way up to the trail earlier in the day, he had seen 2 fresh grizzly bear scats, so there was no doubt that they were around and near the trail that he was on.
I can't get off the word scat.
Skidatitidudadudu. Yeah.
Yes.
2 fresh scats.
No, I'm just imagining that sound coming out of a bear's ass.
It's so stupid.
We are, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a day. All right. When Ted made it to that portion of the hike where he had seen the bear droppings, he took out his bear spray. That way he could hopefully protect himself if it came to that.
Does bear spray even really work?
I think. It's just like super extra heavy duty mace.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, for an animal that will continue charging after getting shot like 10 times.
Yeah.
I'm like, does mace really work?
It's not foolproof and it won't kill the bear, obviously, but it's hopefully going to give someone enough time to like get away from the situation.
Yeah, I mean, you hope, but do you know what I mean?
Yes, totally.
It's like 10 bullets versus spicy spray.
Just, you know? Spicy eyes, ouchie.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, I don't know how good it works, and I hope to never find out.
We won't.
And you know what? We won't. But anyway, he had to limp through the trail with a serious injury, holding his ice axe that he was using as kind of a miniature cane and the bear spray in the other hand. And, I mean, think about it. If a bear sees someone who's, like, hunched over and limping, that's easy meal.
Yum, yum. They don't hunt humans, though, right? I thought it was just, like, if you mountain fuck lions. With them. Oh, yeah, the mountain lions will do that.
If a mountain lion, because I was looking at, like, the Glacier National Park website or whatever, and they were talking about, like, what to do if you are seeing a grizzly bear or a black bear or a mountain lion. And under the mountain lion section, they were like, children and small adults are particularly vulnerable. So, seems like they do not discriminate against humans or animals or whatever. They just want an easy meal. And if you're hurt, you're pretty much an easy meal.
Yeah.
So as he limped, he felt like it was only a matter of time before he did run into a grizzly bear or whatever else out there, because it had just been one of those days. And, like, of course he would run into something.
It had been one of those days.
No, you know what I mean, though? Like,
no, that's... Now I can't stop thinking about, like, everyone has those days. Everybody's and he's just, like, limping with a back, like a broken back.
A broken back and an ice axe through bear country? Come on. All right. A few hours later, Ted managed to make it all the way to the meadow around Gunsight Lake. And as he continued down the trail, he ran into 2 people who happened to be hiking in the area.
Beautiful.
We love that. That's good news. As he approached them, hunched over, holding the ice axe, he called out, "Hey, can you help me?" and they asked him what happened, and he told them that he had fallen into a crevasse while trying to hike down Jackson Glacier. The couple was very shocked at that news, and they asked him what he planned to do, and he said he planned on hiking the 6.2 miles he had left to make it to the road to hopefully flag somebody down. Ted knew at this point that he wasn't in the clear, but at the same time, he was extremely relieved to now be with other people. And he didn't even know how lucky he was, because two people who found him on the trail helped him back to their campsite, where not one, but two people were trained in emergency first aid.
Wow.
Isn't that pretty crazy? So he's like, I'm going to hike the 6.2 miles down to the road. And they're like, hell you no. are. You're coming with us back to our camp where there's two people who are trained in emergency medicine.
Yeah. I was like, there's no fucking way you're hiking down the mountain, dude.
No, literally.
I mean, it does kind of sound like he would have done it.
Yeah, he would have had to. But who knows what he would have
done. You don't have to. Relax.
He did not have to. And so the two people who were trained in emergency first aid were Justin Ricks and Eric Harness.
That's his name. Eric Harness.
His last name is like even too, safe.
This is too perfect.
I know. Eric Harness said Ted had the best people he possibly could out there because he had been training in first aid for years and years, and Justin had also been trained in first aid for years, and he was part of a search and rescue team.
Come on.
Come on.
Who else do you want?
You literally stumble upon search and rescue. I mean, it isn't search and rescue. It's just someone who does it, but like, dude, that's the best possible scenario.
Right.
Eric and Justin knew that the first thing they had to do was assess how badly Ted had been hurt. So they started asking him questions like what his name was, what day it was, also what happened to him. And they couldn't believe he had just walked off of a mountain after suffering that major of a fall and he was completely coherent. They thought he must have had a concussion. Ted told them that his pain was coming from his lower back. And when they asked him what level his pain was at, he told them a 4.
No way.
But so a 4 seemed not so terrible, but they were worried that his level 4 pain would turn into a level 8 in just a few hours. He had so much adrenaline pumping through him at that point, they couldn't know what his pain would be like later on. Everyone at the campsite offered items of theirs to help Ted be more comfortable. They put his backpack under his head, kind of like a pillow. They gave him a sleeping bag to put over him. They gave him food and water and told him that they would figure out a way to get him out of there. But they knew that no one could hike out that night. There was too high of a risk of having a grizzly bear encounter, and it was already so late in the day. And hiking alone at night through that territory is a no-no.
No.
It just wasn't a safe situation. So their other option was activating a spot satellite receiver that Eric's brother had brought along with him. This device could send a message to Search and Rescue Coordination Center and might bring in rescuers that night. They knew that it wasn't a guarantee that anyone would be sent out that night because the search and rescue might also very well decide it was too dark and dangerous to come out that night. And activating it could also lead to a really high financial cost for rescue. So they approached Ted with his options, and they said he could either wait it out with them, or they could press the button and call for help. But either way, we don't know when they're going to come, and if you press the button, you're going to pay big money.
You could also be bleeding internally.
Yes.
You probably are.
Uh-huh.
And you might not make it through the night.
Correct. He had a big decision to make.
I'm pushing the fucking button.
So Ted told them that he was comfortable with their decisions thus far, and he felt like he could make it through the night and wait it out until daylight. Because they were like, okay, if you don't press the button, then we're going to send our people out at first light, and they're going to go get help for you. So he's like, you can either
free? He's like, how much?
Right. And what do you charge for that service? So he was like, all right, that sounds good. Basically, you guys go out first light. Because even if you pushed the button, there was no guarantee that they would come out that night. Because you can't really fly a helicopter at night. And also, they wouldn't be able to necessarily find them in the middle of the night.
Can you really not fly a helicopter at night?
I don't think so.
Why not?
Haven't there been so many stories that we've told that's like, okay, we have to wait for the helicopter at first light?
I don't know. It's like you can fly a plane at night. Why can't you fly a helicopter at night? They haven't figured that out.
Okay, so we did look it up, and I'm kind of getting mixed things. So it says helicopters can be flown at night, and they are often used in search and rescue missions after dark, as well as for purposes of patrolling the streets by the police, blah, blah, blah. But then another thing says, with an overcast sky or no moon and without sufficient lighting, the horizon is invisible and it becomes impossible to visually maintain control of the helicopter. So it seems like if you're, you know, a police helicopter and you've got like a big old light and there's like brightness around you, then yes, you can fly it at night. But if you're in the middle of nowhere in the dark, then you can't see shit and you can't really fly it.
That makes sense.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
So Ted decided that he would wait for the people he was with to go out at first light and, you know, get help. And because he decided that, they just tried to make Ted as comfortable as possible. Even with everything they gave him, Ted did not sleep a wink. He wasn't even in a tent. He was out on the ground under a sleeping bag. And also the pain was so bad that he couldn't sleep if he tried. And he did try. But
they didn't even put him in a tent?
I don't think they had an extra tent, and maybe they were all too small or something. I don't know.
Wait, they wouldn't let him in their tent? What the fuck, guys?
I don't think they really wanted to move him a ton, and they were just like, already had him on the ground under
guys,
a sleeping bag.
Put him in a tent.
I think there was at least one person that was with him like the entire time.
It still feels weird, no?
It does like, kind of feel weird.
Put him in a tent.
I don't want to judge these people because clearly they're really awesome and like, did everything for him, so like that's great, but also it is kind of strange.
I kind of would want to ask them some questions.
Yeah, I guess, right. The next morning, as the sun was barely beginning to rise, three of the people in their camp started the 6 mile hike out to the road. After the three people had left to get help for Ted, one of the other women who stayed back at the camp, named Janet, sat with Ted for hours on end. She talked to him and held his hand as they waited for help. And that was extremely comforting for him. More than once, they heard a helicopter in the distance, but they were for helicopter tours of the Glacier National Park for tourists. So that it wasn't for him. So every time they would hear a helicopter, they'd be like, oh, hang on, wait, is that for me? And then it would just be like, and if you look to your left, you'll see a glacier.
I mean, at a certain point, if you're search and rescue, can't you page the helicopter and be like, okay, I get that they paid today, but you know what I mean? Like they all can talk, right? Cell phones exist at this point.
Yeah, it's 2013.
They have a phone. They have a button thing.
They have the magic
button. Why can't they send the magic button to the helicopters?
They're not pressing the magic button because
figure it out.
He doesn't want to pay the moolah for the magic button.
Oh.
Each time they would hear one of these tourist helicopters, they would have a ping of hope, but it was never for him. And by around 10 o'clock, Ted heard another helicopter coming. He was extremely excited because he had a feeling that this one was for him. It circled a few times, getting lower each time, and then Janet turned to him and said, "That's for you." The helicopter landed and medics loaded him onto a backboard and loaded him in to fly off to Kalispell, Montana Hospital. Once at the hospital, Ted learned that he had two injured vertebrae, one of which was fractured and the other had been shattered.
Ugh.
Slow blink.
Oh my God.
It's like, oh God. A bone fragment from the shattered vertebrae had been pushing into his spinal cord, and if they didn't operate immediately, he could be paralyzed. But Ted's delicate back surgery was a success. Doctor said the injury to his vertebrae was within 2 millimeters of paralyzing him, and he was extremely lucky to be alive. 2 millimeters.
I mean, yeah, that's incredibly lucky. I never really, like, listened past the word shattered for a little bit.
Oh, you just...
Because I'm just, like, ugh, so yeah. Viscerally, like, uncomfortable.
Right. Ted said, if I had any more injuries, that would have been it for him. If he had broken his arm or his leg, or if he was even knocked unconscious in the fall, he easily could have died out there. Because think about that. If his arm was broken, like his right hand, his right arm, no chance he's getting out. Or his leg?
Yeah, he kind of needed all his limbs, huh?
Yeah. It's like breaking your back is awful and like violent and so painful, but like thank goodness it was just his back, because if it was his arms or his legs, he would have been stuck in there. He wouldn't have been able to climb out 40 feet.
No, or like his pelvis.
Right. Oh my God. Imagine his pelvis. It's like you can't even move if you break your pelvis.
Yeah. So I guess weirdly, the best place for him to break was his back.
Yeah. If you have to break anything, I guess. Terrible.
You know? I mean, maybe like fingers or yeah, toes.
Or like but... your nose.
Yeah, some, but, you know, that is weirdly, like, he needed all four limbs, and, like, yeah. The back was an okay place.
Yeah.
As long as it didn't paralyze you.
Yeah, and he didn't hit his head, clearly, because he didn't get knocked unconscious.
Yeah. Oh, I completely forgot that, too.
Mm-hmm. Remember, you have a whole noggin up there.
Yeah, whole brain bag.
A whole fragile noggin melon. He had to have multiple surgeries, but with healing and physical therapy, he would be able to learn to walk again. And Ted's family and his girlfriend Jessica stayed with him and helped him through his recovery. He spent months recovering in his parents' home in Kansas City. And looking back on the ordeal, Ted said that he definitely chose to cut corners in his hike. He didn't want to use his ice axe when he should have been, probably out of laziness because he thought that nothing bad would happen to him. And when it did, he just wasn't prepared. But also, he's grateful he had his ice axe with him, because if he didn't have it down in the crevasse, he 100% would not have made it out of there. He said he made one dumb mistake that could have been prevented that got him into that situation, so his takeaway is to use the tools that you have. Pretty straightforward. To the surprise of some, Ted said he can't wait to get back to Montana to give it another go. Only this time he'll use proper safety equipment and he'll wait until doctors clear him. And that would be after 3 to 4 months of recovery.
That's really not that long.
I know. His girlfriend Jessica told reporters that the incident wouldn't stop Ted from climbing again. She said he'll hike again, but definitely not alone. He's in love with the mountains. That's his life.
Yeah. You know, I feel like we'll never understand it, but it is just kind of something beautiful to see somebody have that much conviction or love for what they do.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand having a passion and like
well, yeah,
wanting
but,
to continue
you know,
doing that passion, even though
even after you almost die.
Even
it's
though
a
my passion
thing.
Is not mountaineering, I can understand wanting to do your hobbies.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, wouldn't it be kind of harder to imagine a scenario where you would almost die podcasting? You know what I mean?
True, true. Also, I feel like you have to really like the thing that you're doing.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, to then also go back and continue doing it. But it's not like it was his first time mountaineering. That was like his whole life, so
right,
it makes sense. From what I could find, it seems like Ted was an aspiring actor in Los Angeles, or potentially still is. So hopefully that's going well for him. He's done a few acting gigs and voiceover work, which is pretty cool. And he's got a really nice voice. So
really?
Good for him.
That's a cool side note.
I know, isn't
it? Go Ted.
I know.
Look at him go.
And I looked into this because it feels like there are so many stories of people falling into crevasses, and it seems like that happening is becoming more frequent, and one of the reasons is poorly snowed glaciers, aka global warming. Like, the ice bridges are just less stable because it's getting warmer. And also, like, there are, I think, more climbers, so it's just, like, the most it's ever been. For people falling into gigantic holes in the ground.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, hate that. One thing I hate, global warming.
Yeah. Second thing, people falling into crevasses.
You gonna say carabas?
Carabas. I don't know. I short-circuited.
Hey.
I just don't like the thought of people dying, you know, in a crevasse.
And I agree. But yeah, it seems like it's more of an issue now than it was in the past, which is spooky. I also found another story of a 70-year-old man who fell into a crevasse recently, and he lasted 6 days down there. I couldn't find his...
Bro, what?
I couldn't find his name, but I have, like, a blurb about it if you want me to read it.
Do it.
Okay.
70? He fell 70. Down a crevasse.
Yeah. So after he fell, he was immediately wet up to his waist and gloves with no possibility of self-rescue. He was healthy, fit, and was not taking any medication. He had a history of 2 leg fractures many years ago, but otherwise an uneventful medical history. He had hiking equipment, including gloves, hat, and some food, but was without specific glacier equipment such as crampons, ice axe, and rope. So he didn't have the ice axe and the crampons, which is like the most important thing if you fall into a crevasse. And in the crevasse, there was some visible daylight, and he sat down on his backpack. There was no cellular network coverage, and his mobile phone battery was soon depleted. Can you tell that I copied and pasted this? He believed that hikers could have been in his vicinity, so he periodically shouted for help. And to conserve body heat, he covered himself with rescue foil. He rationed his food to just a few biscuits and one row of chocolate per day. And he drank water from the dripping ice, which is dangerous in itself because if you drink like snow water or ice water when you're in a survival situation, it lowers your core body temperature and you can get hypothermia faster.
Yeah, but also wouldn't you die of thirst first?
Potentially, I guess, but the hypothermia is nothing to mess around with either. But yes, he became increasingly thirsty, which gave him no other choice. He reported that he had lost hope of survival on the fourth day, but resisted panicking. And on the sixth day, hikers heard him call, and they called a helicopter and rescue team, which mobilized. And from there, he was winched up from the crevasse and flown to a local hospital. So the only reason he got out was because he continued to like call for help, even though he didn't think anyone was out there. Well, that's he kind so of crazy. Did, but you know, I mean, that was his only way he could have gotten out because he didn't have any equipment to climb out himself. And also he was 70.
Right. I mean, so, yeah, that's old. I mean, I can't believe he lasted 6 full days down there.
Yeah. He had multiple broken bones. He also had cold injuries of both feet resembling trench foot. So he had trench foot in his feet, which is a condition caused by long exposure to damp and cold conditions. He was admitted to the ICU, but quickly recovered, and it looks like his big toes were amputated because of necrosis. But 4 months later, he was doing well and continued to enjoy walking.
Good for him. Mm-hmm. It is so amazing to me sometimes what the human body can endure.
Yes, for sure. And also on my research journey of crevasses, I found a video of someone who had like a GoPro on their helmet and they were skiing down a mountain and they fell into a crevasse. They were thankfully like with a group of people and they, you know, were able to be pulled out just by a rope and stuff. But like you can literally watch the person.
Did you watch it?
I did. And I can hopefully either post like a screen recording of the video on Instagram or I'll post the link to it. But like, look at this. You can just see how quickly it happens because he's just like skiing.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
I'm showing him the video, obviously, but yeah, he's just like skiing down the mountain and then the ground just like comes out from under him because there was like a snow bridge over this crevasse and he just falls in and then he ends up falling onto an ice ledge so he doesn't fall all the way down. And you can see as he like looks down that the crevasse goes so much deeper than where he actually fell. So if he fell in any other spot, he could have just continued to fall and potentially broken his neck and just died. But thankfully he was with people and, you know, like I said, was pulled out. But isn't that so spooky?
This video is insane.
I know.
It's like the earth swallows him.
Right.
And then he's literally sliding down the side of this just
opening.
Straight down.
Crack
in the earth. And it's just, I don't know, wet enough or thick enough. So he sticks his ski in the side. And the side is as big as his ski. And that's the only thing that stops him.
Yes.
But he probably fell like, I don't know, 50.
Yeah, I think it was like 50 feet or something like that.
50 feet?
Yeah. But anyway, isn't that crazy? That's my story of crevasses and what have you. But
they'd be scary.
They are spooky.
Stay away from the crevasses, dude.
Yeah, yeah. If you are climbing on a glacier or a big snowy mountain, maybe be with people and, you know, have safety equipment with you.
And pray.
Pray or something. I don't know. But yeah, that's the story. Do you have anything else to add to it before we move on?
No, I mean, I'm glad he got back to doing what he loved.
I agree. But anyway, what is your good thing?
My good thing is that I'm going to New York this weekend.
Yes.
So it will have already happened when this comes out, but I'm going to visit my old friend Jason.
Shout out Jason.
Shout him out.
And shout out my friends who I'm visiting.
Yeah, so it's your friend's birthday, but we're going to have a little boys time.
Yes.
Man time.
That's your good thing. Good boys time.
Yeah.
So, it's important to see your friends and have some time with them, you know?
Yeah, it'll be fun. But, you know, we haven't really seen each other that much in the last few years, but we were roommates back in the day.
Right.
At this point. So it'll be good to see him.
Yeah.
But what is your good thing?
My good thing is that my back doesn't hurt as much anymore.
I was genuinely terrified.
Yeah, it was kind of spooky because I was like, am I going to have to go to the hospital? Am I gonna have to go to the emergency room or get surgery on my back? I don't know. Maybe. Spooky. But I think I just like pulled something, or like, I don't know, lifted my luggage too quickly. Something like that. But yeah, it was just a spooky couple of hours where I was like, uh-oh, this is real pain. But I'm feeling better now, and my back feels almost mostly normal. So that's good.
Yeah, I'm very glad.
Kind of a bleak good thing, but it is a good thing. I am glad to be feeling
better.
Lack
of pain is so tight.
Yeah, that's why earlier when we were talking about his back pain, I was like, I can empathize. Even if it's a sliver of what he was experiencing, because clearly I do not have shattered vertebrae. My vertebrae are pretty messed up, but they're not shattered at the very least. So,
well, I mean, at least you have a back. That's, you know, that's kind of sweet.
That's something. Yeah, I guess I have.
You could just not have a back.
That's an interesting thought. Thank you for putting that into perspective for me. And I'll have a bit of a lighter one. Also, I like the beverage Poppy.
Oh, I love Poppy.
This is not sponsored by Poppy. I just like Poppy.
Well, do you want to know where we got Poppy from?
Costco. Anyway, I mean, that's full circle.
Can please sponsor me, for Christ. Does anyone know people?
Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out a bunch of bonus episodes and vote on stories you want to hear, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. You guys keep the lights on, so thank you so much. Get your merch while it's hot at nottodaypodcast.myshopify.com. If you or anyone who knows a story of survival that you would like to share with us and possibly hear on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to nottodaypodcast@gmail.com. We post pictures on Instagram of the stories we talk about. Check us out at nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the T on the podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.